And this is what previous empires found out. After all, the last century was the century of empires. The British Empire couldn't stay indefinitely, either in Asia or in Africa. The French had to get out of Algeria. So why should it be any different this time? Simply because the Americans have nuclear weapons? The whole point is you can't use nuclear weapons if your own troops are in the country. You can't do it. So if you have troops to defend the new collaborationist regime which will be set up there, and you're planning other adventures, you will encourage a resistance. And I think it will be important, extremely important, to give support to such a resistance, because that's what we have to do. We can't stand aloof and be neutral if such a national resistance emerges. It has to be supported. And I think that what we are witnessing now is the linking up of the anti-globalization movements and the anti-war movements, and so it should be, because war is part and parcel of the neoliberal economic agenda. Von Hayek, the father of neoliberal economics in the Washington Consensus, also was a firm believer in wars being waged. He was in favor of bombing Tehran in 1979. He was in favor of bombing Buenos Aires, this so-called mild-mannered economist. He told Thatcher to bomb Buenos Aires during the Falklands War. And they wage wars now to preserve their economic hegemony and their political domination. That's what they're doing. So one has to resist them. Of course we can only resist them politically in the West, I stress that. But the resistance has to happen, and it is happening. And one of the most heartening things of this global upsurge against the war has been the size and scale of the demonstrations in the United States of America. 500,000 people marched in New York. And I think the World Social Forum and other such bodies have now to decide, in my opinion, in my way of thinking, that the way to move forward is, yes, challenge their economics, but also challenge their politics and their wars, which means we have to wage a campaign in large parts of the world to remove American bases from the territories of sovereign independent countries. That will become a growing demand. Just look at them. Look where they are. There are what? 190 member states of the United Nations. 190 member states. And in 120 of these states, there is an American military presence. So what do we have? The United Nations of America. I mean, that's what we have. And how long will people take it? And the only resistance that's possible in many of these countries is a mass resistance, saying we don't want your bases here. Have referendums, campaign, get them out. It'll be a long haul. It's the struggle, I think, which is going to dominate this century. That's why the occupation of Iraq is an event of the greatest magnitude. And that is why it has to be resisted with all the power and all the political might we can summon up. That is why the millions march, and that is why we have to carry on in different ways. I mean, look, don't get demoralized if the size of demonstrations becomes smaller. That's normal. I mean, those of us who are old enough to have lived through the last 30 years, lived through two decades when there were hardly any demonstrations, and a lot of awful things were happening in the world. We know that. This happens. There are ebbs and flows of the mass movement, historically, in every epoch, in every time, in every century. Each generation is different from its preceding one and from the one that follows. People learn in their own time. And the biggest teacher of people is experience. And one of the most heartening things that we've witnessed the day the bombs began to fall on Baghdad and Basra were hundreds of thousands of children marching spontaneously out of their schools to protest against this war. That shook them. That shook them. Because this is a new generation. Its heart is innocent. Its hands are unsullied with blood or anything like that. It speaks the truth. It's pure. And this generation came out and confronted them. Children between the ages of 10 to 16 outside the House of Commons chanting, "Resist, resist, Bush and Blair are terrorists, resist." Quite amazing. Turning pop songs, which you know some of us had never even heard of, into slogans like, "Who let the bombs out? Bush, Bush and Blair." I didn't even know what I didn't even know what it was a reference to, and I had to ask my 16-year-old daughter, who explained it to me with a contemptuous look on her face. So this is the mood which is gripping large parts of the world, but which has to have, sooner or later, political strategies which have to challenge it. And listen, another warning. They know that public opinion is important. They know the media is important. And that is why they control it. And they own it. And they have safe people to whom they entrust it. And that is why during this whole wave of uprisings in the Middle East, we have a strange situation. We have a situation where you can read much sharper criticisms of the Sharon government in Israel and what it's doing to the Palestinians in the Israeli press than you can read in the North American media. And in here I include Canada. It's quite incredible. I say when I see some of these journalists who work for these papers, look, why don't you just reprint what the Israeli press is printing? 2 to 3 Israeli papers, very sharp in their criticisms, publishing accounts which make you weep of what is going on in Palestine. And here people remain quiet. Look, the whole world was disgusted by the Judeo-side of the Second World War. But it seems to me that the principal victims of the Judeo-side were the Jews of Europe, of course, but there were secondary victims of that Judeo-side who were the Palestinians in the Middle East, because no one opens their bloody mouths about them. And we've got to see that. Because people who attack injustice and defend human rights can't afford to be selective. It's only the imperialist powers who can afford to be blind to real suffering and impose a selective vigilantism on the world, which they've done with this invasion of Iraq. So my message to you is very simple. It's the message of the school kids. Resist, resist. Because that is what we have to do, and we have to understand that they are not going to be short-term solutions. This is going to be a long haul. Many of us won't live to see the final victories, which I hope will be won in this century. But the battle lines for this century are already being drawn up. And all the official politicians who refuse to break with the United States will suffer sooner or later. And don't even be surprised if when they feel really pressed, they actually begin to destroy and damage their own democratic institutions because they are no longer serving their needs. And you see this already in the racial profiling which is going on all over North America. They've used 9/11 and they've used these wars to start fingerprinting people if they're of Arab or Muslim origin, or since in the United States there's a lot of ignorance on these matters, if they find Sikhs with beards, fingerprint them as well. They're all the same. Quite amazing what's going on in terms of challenges to civil liberty. So who is going to defend all this? Some political parties, we hope, will. But unless and until there is a movement from below politicians tend not to act. It is the movements from below which shake them. And on that, we saw this very clearly. There was a revolt in the British Parliament, and 149 Labour members of Parliament voted against the war. Now, would they have voted against the war if we hadn't mobilized 1.5 million people on the streets of London? And I tell you, they wouldn't have. They wouldn't have done it. They only did it because they saw the wave of public anger. People who had never demonstrated in their lives, including retired military officers, people from Middle England who came out. That's what shook them, that this was a wave which went way beyond the normal confines of protest in that country. The size of that demonstration had never been seen before in British history. That is what changes politics. That is what forces politicians to think which direction we are going. And there was a layer of people and intellectuals who had caved in completely to the established order in North America and Europe and thought that movements from below, demonstrations, public protests, these are things of the past. They will never recur again. We're living in new times. Well, they've discovered with a shock that we are not living in totally new times. And here I want to end with a wonderful appeal which was made by the American writer Mark Twain. Towards the end of the 19th century, Mark Twain was disgusted by the outbreak of chauvinism and xenophobia in the United States, especially against the Chinese community, at the time of the Boxer Rebellion in China. He was disgusted by it. He was even more disgusted by the occupation of the Philippines by the United States. Because, you know, lots of people imagine that the American Empire only came into being with the victory of the Russian Revolution in 1917. Not true. Absolutely not true. They were moving along quite well in Latin America and parts of the world, occupying it from here and there. And Mark Twain wrote a very, very powerful plea calling on people to form an anti-imperialist league in the United States of America. And the first meeting of the anti-imperialist league took place in, I think it was 1899, in Chicago. And within 2 years, it had 250,000 members. Now, we have to think like that. And the reason, he said, is we have to educate people and challenge what the powers that be are saying. And he said something which was very prescient, and I want to quote from it. It was an unpublished article published after his death, and it was on war. And he said, "The loud little handful, as usual, will shout for the war. The pulpit will warily and cautiously object at first. The great, big, dull bulk of the nation will rub its sleepy eyes and try to make out why there should be a war, and will say earnestly and indignantly, it is unjust and dishonorable, and there is no necessity for it. Then the handful will shout louder. A few fair men on the other side will argue and reason against the war with speech and pen, and at first will have a hearing and be applauded, but it will not last long. Those others will outshout them, and presently the anti-war audience will thin out and lose popularity. Before long you will see this curious thing. The speakers stoned from the platform, free speech strangled by hordes of furious men who in their secret hearts are still at one with those stoned speakers but do not dare to say so. And now the whole nation, pulpit and all, will take up the war cry and shout itself hoarse and mob any honest man who ventures to open his mouth. And presently, such mouths will cease to open. Next, the statesman will invent cheap lies, putting the blame upon the nation that is attacked. And every man will be glad of these conscious, soothing falsities and will diligently study them. and refuse to examine any refutations of them, and thus he will by and by convince himself that the war is just, and will thank God for the better sleep he enjoys after this process of grotesque self-deception. And we see this happening even as we meet in the case of the war against Iraq. So we have to be vigilant, eternally vigilant, because only a vigilant citizenry can put some control on its leaders. And therefore, you live in a country on the edge of the United States. It's very important that the resistance and the anti-war movement and an anti-imperialist movement is strong here. I sometimes think that Michael Moore exaggerates a bit when he flatters Canada. But the fact that you are not the United States is something which is very important. After all, this country offered a haven to many draft resistors and draft dodgers during the Vietnam War. And if the American Empire carries along on its merry way and sees the attack on Iraq as only the first step of reordering the world, then I think there will be draft dodgers, there will be soldiers, some who have already said that they are not going to fight and are being court-martialed, and more help will be needed. So that's all one can say, that, you know, what is given to us in the lives we have on this earth, which are, at my age, seem quite brief, but for many of you there are long years ahead, what sort of lives should we live? I can never understand people who have decided to completely accept what the established order puts down. And the kids in Seattle woke the whole world up when they marched against globalization. And that was a wake-up call which was heard all over the world and was an inspiration. And one of the things that was inspirational was that it had happened in the heart of the United States itself. Because finally, when the time comes for reckoning, it is the heart of that empire which needs to explode if the world is going to be reordered and changed in the interests of the poor and the underprivileged and the oppressed. Thank you. Thank you.